This is Ukrainian Spaces, your show where we feature the diverse Ukrainian voices and decolonize Ukraine conversations online. And I'm Maxim Aristavi, a journalist and proud co-owner. And with me, and Valeria Vashevska.
I forgot what my name was for a second. Yes, I'm Valeria Vashevska, and we've not done this introduction yet. This is quite serious and professional. And I'm a campaigner and activist based in London, and also, as Maxim said, yeah, the other co-owner of Ukrainian Spaces. And it's amazing to be doing this with Maxim a year and a bit on from the full-scale invasion. And I'm just so excited that we still have so many people, so many amazing Ukrainians that we want to interview and talk to and feature on our podcast. So that's been just amazing to see. I think I just wanted to start with acknowledging that for a lot of people this night, a lot of people in Ukraine this night was extremely intense. I'm sure everyone has seen in the news that Ukraine and Kyiv experienced one of the kind of most intense attacks in recent times on the city. And I guess in a good way, someone was saying that, you know, this night was the biggest advertisement for all the kind of systems that we're getting, anti-missile systems that we're getting to protect people, because all of the missiles and all of the things that were flying in the direction of Kyiv were shot down.
I wanted to start this show with quoting one of our previous guests and part of Ukrainian Spaces family, prominent Ukrainian journalist, Nika Melkazarova. And she wrote on Twitter this morning that, this is a quote, "Another sleepless night, as I was watching debris of Russian drones and missiles falling from the sky, I thought about all those nations who donated great air defense systems to us. You can't imagine this feeling when you see those Russian death monsters defeated. Thank you all." This is a great sentiment, reminding once again that the fact that no people were injured on this massive attack with supersonic ballistic missiles in Kyiv this night is a direct result of solidarity, international solidarity, in, you know, people showing up for Ukrainians, even for this show, every time. This is something that is growing and growing, despite that this genocide has been happening for over a year. And even our today's featured Ukrainian is with us, as able to speak her truth, is here because of that solidarity. So thank you guys so much. And before we probably introduce our featured Ukrainians, also wanted to send huge thanks to our Patreon sponsors, because this is 100% independently supported show and only exists to love, devotion, and optimism and enthusiasm that our Patreon sponsors send our way every day. So thank you guys so much. Oksana, if you can unmute yourself.
Hi, everyone.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining Ukrainian Spaces. Today's conversation is something that we with Valeria wanted to have and feature your work for so long. So we're super excited that you had an opportunity to join today. But we will start with our golden rule. Our featured Ukrainians always introduce themselves the way they want. So please go ahead and tell us who you are, where you come from, and what you do since the genocide started.
First, thank you for inviting me. That's really important to be here in Ukrainian Spaces. And thank you for giving a voice to Ukrainians. So my name is Oksana Semenik, and I'm art historian and journalist. I worked as a journalist since 2016, and I was writing to Ukrainian magazines about contemporary Ukrainian art. But last year I was in a fellowship program at Zimmerle Art Museum, New Jersey, and Rutgers University Art History Department. So there I worked as an assistant curator and researcher, and my main research topic was the decolonization of Ukrainian art in the museum collection. But also I almost finished my thesis in the art history department at the Taras Shevchenko Kyiv University, and my topic is the image of the Chernobyl catastrophe in Ukrainian art. But also probably you know me as a creator of Ukrainian art history Twitter account, where I'm trying to tell more about Ukrainian art and about the colonization of European and US museums.
Thank you so much for introducing yourself. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners follow you and know you, as you say, as the owner and creator of the Ukrainian Art History Twitter account. And we've a lot of us learned a lot over, you know, months and months from you. So thank you so much for that. I hope you don't mind, but I wanted to ask you the first question and ask you something a little bit more personal. And I know you've spoken about this before, but when the full-scale invasion started, you were in Kyiv, in Bucha, am I correct?
Yeah, I lived in Bucha, and we was my husband and my cat stuck there. So I left in 11th March when it was a green corridor, so we escaped. We were walking to Kyiv by foot, like about 20 kilometers. So yeah, that's correct.
For all of us at that point in time in the beginning, and particularly for people like you who were, you know, caring about their survival more than anything else, we still wanted to know what our role was in this world. And you wrote about kind of, or spoke about being an art historian and trying to figure out, like, what was your role in protecting Ukraine and helping the soldiers on the ground. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that now, and how perhaps your thinking back then has you know, changed and is different now, and just in general, sort of, did art and your role in this change since those first days of the invasion up until today?
That's changed a lot, actually, because I was working more as a journalist and communication specialist. And of course, I had many projects. I planned them for this 2022. And of course, everything changed since the full-scale invasion started. And, you know, as you understand, the situation in Bucha were really difficult. And we couldn't escape, so we experienced the occupation. We were living in the basement, sleeping in a cold floor, in closets. We didn't have much food and water. Nothing romantic about it. It's not, you know, it's not the occupation in France during Second World War when I don't know, maybe someone has a romantic image that if occupation starts, nothing changed, but Russian occupation means death and destruction. And we couldn't even leave the basement because Russians would kill anybody in the street. And this Yablonska Street, if you know it, where many bodies were found, it's next street to us, so it was very, very close. But I had plenty of time to think. And I was thinking about Ukrainian art history and about our past and future and how the war changed the art. And for example, I was thinking about the work of Ukrainian artist Pavlo Makov. He was representing Ukraine in the Venice Biennale, and his project called Fontaine of Exhaustion. So it's a very cool project, actually. You can read about it. But it was more, I think, before full-scale invasion, the idea of that fontaine of exhaustion was more about ecological problems or even metaphorical conversation about burnout, you know, how we all burning out at the work with all our stressful life. But what did we know about the stress before the full-scale invasion, right? Yeah, so, but for me, but then I understood that it was very simple. It changed the idea. For me, it's just no water means no life. That's it. So art became very, it was very easy. It was like speaking, not metaphorical for me, but it was not general ideas. It was very connected to life, to our, to world, to everything what's happening around. But also what's important, that Russians, they also want to destroy not just our cities, but our identity and us as Ukrainians, as a group of people connected with the same culture, with the same ideas. If they will succeed in the genocide, I don't believe it in. Of course, I don't. Mm-hmm. I believe in our victory so much. But everyone should understand that the Russian culture, Russian world, and Russian occupation in Ukraine means actually destruction of Ukrainian culture. It can't exist in the same time.
And Oksana, thank you so much. I wish there would be like a digital equivalent of sending you the biggest hug possible. Because
thanks.
Honestly, it takes, yeah. There is not a single story from like Bucha that I've heard that did not like also destroys you from inside, because this is probably something that one of the worst things that ever happened, not only on our soil, but elsewhere. And speaking about it, it's hard and it takes bravery. So thank you so much for sharing with the rest of our audience about it. But also, if you don't mind me saying, I think this is also such a quintessential Ukrainian thing, surviving something like that. And when in fact, when everybody else would expect you to think just about survival, you took that and you doubled down on your work. And you saw in it, in that single most horrifying moment, something that gave you the purpose to carry on and even double down on what you did before, because your work is actually started long before genocide as well. And you already started talking about how you saw in that moment the importance of talking about Ukrainian art, and how Ukrainian art has been plundered and stolen by Russia for so many centuries without the rest of the world even realizing that many so-called Russian art names and, you know, names in the Russian so-called art are actually Ukrainian names. So can you explain for the rest of the audience maybe how come, you know, so many Ukrainian artists used to be or are still are being considered Russian? And when was maybe the first moment that you were aware that the world is mislabeling Ukrainian artists on such a massive scale globally? So what basically made you kind of inspired and made you make that choice to speak out and expose that injustice?
Thanks for that question. I think it's gonna be a long monologue, just me answering, because actually I don't remember the first time when I realized that many Ukrainian artists considered Russian in the museums and in the art history, but probably it started with Malevich. I think I was 18 years old when I realized he was from Ukraine and he was connected to Ukraine. And that's how I understood that I knew a lot about Ukrainian art, especially avant-garde, that of course many people know just as Russian. And I knew almost nothing about Ukrainian art because these books and information and everything from the school, even in the university, everywhere, it was just about Russian avant-garde, how great Russian avant-garde is, how great Russian culture is, but just a little literature or a little talking and knowledge about Ukrainian art, which was, you know, very strange because we live in Ukraine, and I didn't understand at that time that it's caused because of colonization, right? That we were, that Ukraine was a colony, and that's how it works. I remember I felt very offended and even annoyed when I've seen that that Malevich or Rapin was they were named as Russians on the labels in many museums, because like, why this artist, why they're Russian? I mean, I would be very offended if someone would call me Russian or call Ukraine Russia, right? So it's the same problem for me. It's like I should prove that Ukraine exists and Ukrainian culture exists, and I should prove that I exist. So decolonization, it's not new in the museum world, and people, they're talking about it for decades now, but if scholars know about British colonialism or French or stolen artifacts from indigenous people in the United States, for example, conversation about Russian imperialism started just now. And we should understand why actually we don't know many names of Ukrainian artists. Because first they were appropriated by Russia, as Repin, Malevich, Alexandre Exter, and others. They immigrated because of political reasons after Bolshevik Revolution, for example, in 1917, because for many artists it was actually a question of a life and death, because repression started at that time, you know. So this it's a complex problem. Why it's so easy to, to call Ukrainian artist as a Russian one? Also because I think scholars, curators, and other people, they were ignoring this. They were ignoring these problems of Russian colonialism. If you will look at the Russian studies departments in American and European universities, they just pay attention only to Russia, but not to the Ukraine or to Georgia or other countries. So in the mind of these scholars, it's still just the Russia. It wasn't even Russian Empire with different nations, right? It wasn't Soviet Union also with different nation and also as a colonial power. It was just Russia. And even we see that on the labels in the museums. So, for example, Smithsonian, they mention Ukrainian cities like Kyiv, Kharkiv, Odessa, Kamianets-Podilsky, etc., as Russia, not even Russian Empire. And they knew that it's not correct, but they still do not understand the problem. So to reclaim our art, we need to do a lot of research, right? To write a lot of books and popularize actually Ukrainian culture within the country and abroad.
Yeah, and you know, we were, when we were preparing for this episode with Maxim, we were just saying how it's been so amazing to see how you've been like taking on basically museums and in terms of like the language that they use, the terms that they use, how they talk about Ukrainian art and a lot of these things. But it also, you know, when you were talking about Malevich, it made me remember this one episode from my life that I just wanted to bring up, which now makes me feel extremely embarrassed, but also it just shows you the way that Westerners have been talking about, you know, art, Ukrainian art. There was a really big Malevich exhibition in the Tate Modern in London, and I went to it, and I remember coming out of it, and I remember like not having a single kind of, from reading everything that was on the walls, from reading everything that was in the brochures and stuff like that, I came out and I didn't even, like, I didn't know he was Ukrainian. They didn't make an effort to explain that he was a Ukrainian artist. And, you know, I remember briefly looking at like some of his works and seeing that a lot of the themes were like to do with agriculture workers and like farmers and things like that. And I was like, that, you know, looks like, and those were the paintings that, and he wasn't allowed to show, I think, and he got into trouble for some of that. But I just think it's so insane how me as a Ukrainian went to an exhibition of another Ukrainian. This was like, I don't know, a few years ago. And just, they should have, you know, I think the curators and whoever in the museum, they should have explained a little bit more about the context of who Malevich was and why he was persecuted and all of these things, but they just didn't. And it's just so crazy to think that this kind of realization, including to Ukrainians, and it's coming to Ukrainians now like myself, but also like it should be coming to a lot of these other people, like the curators, the people who host these exhibitions, and I hope it is. But I know that in the article that we'll share later with everyone, you wrote that you were kind of really frustrated with people using the term Soviet artist instead of Ukrainian artist in a lot of the descriptions of Ukrainian art. And I really liked your response to them, but I just wanted to ask you how you in general feel about this term Soviet artist used by people talking about Ukrainian art.
It's a good question. I had this conversation, I think first in my life last year in the Zimmerli. So I was working in the non-conformist Soviet art department. I was just working there for one semester as a fellowship. So, and I didn't know that Russian curators are working. They work there even now. And we were talking about this changing the nationalities and adding the correct place of the birth, and because I think so. I did a research there, and about 70 artists from Ukraine. They were considered as Russians, so they were in this so-called Russian art collection, which of course it was incorrect. And we were talking, and this guy, he said, but they were born in the Soviet Union. Maybe we should call them just Soviet because the identity was so difficult. It was so difficult to understand, to define at that time. And I said, like, why then we don't use the Third Reich, talking about artists who were born during the Nazi occupation in different countries? Because Soviet Union, it was what it was, like occupation of all these countries and colonizations. Because we had independent country before the, creation of Ukrainian Soviet Republic. When we call the artist Soviet, or when we're talking about the Soviet art, just Soviet, not, for example, Ukrainian art during Soviet period, or Russian art during Soviet period, but just Soviet, I think it's I think we're just accepting this propaganda about Soviet people, Soviet nation, Soviet country where everyone is the same as anyone else, etc. Because it wasn't true. It still have this hierarchy, and Russia actually it was the same as Russian Empire, because Russia and Moscow and Saint Petersburg, these cities were more powerful, and they were like the main one, and the other countries were just for resources, for the resource of land, I don't know, for resource of people, etc., etc. You just mentioned the Malevich, and I think it's important to say that I'm thinking that many curators, they do not talk about his Ukrainian roots and the Ukrainian and connection to Ukrainian traditional art. I think because if they will mention that, everyone understands that he's actually a Ukrainian artist, and why we should call him Russian artist. It's the same like with Alexandra Exter. She lived in Russia just for 3 years. She was born in Poland, and when she was 3 years old, she moved to Kiev. So she was a student of Kiev Art School. Then she created her own school here. She was very connected to Ukrainian art, traditional one. She even curated the exhibitions. It was like connection between traditional Ukrainian art and avant-garde, because avant-garde, actually, Ukrainian one, it took a lot of from traditional art. And then she moved just because of political reasons, actually. She moved to Moscow, because here, after Bolsheviks came, it was just an awful life, awful poor, just impossible life. So she moved to Moscow for 3 years. And then when she had a chance to work on Venice Biennale Pavilion in 1924, she just stayed in the Europe, and she lived in France. But everywhere, like in the Metropolitan Art Museum and MoMA, Modern Art Museum in New York, Philadelphia Art Museum, and many, many others, she considered as Russian. Like, why?
And considering that these names that you mentioned, both Exter and Malevich, the modern European art wouldn't be existing if not them. They informed so much in terms of contemporary arts in Europe and elsewhere, and they were always labeled as Russian, even to this very date. But I remember this moment when I thought Malevich was Russian, and this speaks volumes about how Russian colonialism even would erase this knowledge even within the indigenous nations about our artists, about our
same
art. Yeah, but I remember when I first saw the painting that Malevich did, where he channels the crimes of the Holodomor genocide, and it wasn't officially called as, you know, Holodomor painting, and of course he wouldn't risk, you know, kind of openly saying that this is devoted to genocide. But when I firstly saw it, I was so shocked, because it spoke to me on so many levels, and I felt pain, I had tears in my eyes. And I didn't, again, I didn't know that this is a Ukrainian painter channeling the generational pain and witnessing one of the worst things that happened to our nation. And I couldn't realize that someone who's not Ukrainian could do that. And this speaks, it tells you all about how Russia would steal this knowledge even from us. But I wanted to, for you to also maybe help us a bit to understand why you specifically focus so much of your fantastic educational work on the period of avant-garde. And I know you, Ukrainian avant-garde, and you talked a lot about it, that basically if you don't understand arts or, you know, maybe not very educated on this issue, if you just zero in on this one example of how Russia appropriated and stole Ukrainian avant-garde, you can actually understand a lot about Russian colonialism and Russian imperialism in general. So why do you think it's important to for people to, you know, educate themselves and focus on that specific period as well?
I think, first of all, this Russian avant-garde is kind of like brand of Russian culture. I mean, if you ask someone what do they know about Russian culture and Russian art, they will definitely tell you about Malevich, because if not, because the Black Square created in 1915, which is also very important, because Russian art historians, they trying to popularize this narrative that the avant-garde was created after Bolshevik Revolution, that it's like, you know, it's an art of the Soviet period, it's art of the this revolution, right? But it's actually not, because it's existed before. Even, I mean, look at the Black Square. I think one of the most important works in the art history ever, created in 1915. So I think Malevich is really good example to understand how they're doing that, and how actually Malevich was connected to Ukrainian culture. As you know, he was born in Kiev, but he spent a lot of he spent many years in the Ukrainian villages, different ones. So he even in his autobiography, really important book, I think, where that actually ignored by many art historians and curators, because in this book he actually considered himself as Ukrainian. He said many times that he's Ukrainian and how Ukrainian traditional culture affected him and his art. So when I'm talking, for example, to different museum curators, and I'm saying like, hey, this is his autobiography. It's not like even I'm just considering him as Ukrainian, or we as an art historians from Ukraine considering him like that. It's just so many, I don't know, so many articles about it, so many researchers, so many documents, so many, even his autobiography, right? But the other problem is that we can't use the archives of Malevich, because most of them are still in Russia, as actually archives of many Ukrainian artists. So we don't have an access there. And even before full-scale invasion, and even before the war started, my colleagues from different museums, they said that it was really hard to get to these archives. So this Russian specialist, they refused to help, actually, and to give the information. Yesterday was actually the day when the Malevich died. In the 1930s, he was a teacher in Ukrainian Art Academy in Kiev. And then he was summoned to Leningrad for questioning with KGB or NKVD. He was tortured there, and his health was in such bad condition that he died in Leningrad in 1935 because of that. So actually, we see that Soviet government killed him, but very slowly. And you will never find this mention of torture and accusations and interrogations in the Russian books about Malevich. Russian art critics and art historians who had this access to the KGB archives, they note that Malevich answered in this questioning that he was Ukrainian, so his nationality was Ukrainian.
And thank you for this powerful lesson for all of us on a little bit of decolonization as we speak with you as well, because I didn't know this. And I think that also, can you imagine, like, just for a second, can you imagine how having died because of the Soviet regime, having died because of your being tortured for, you know, I guess a lot of different things, but also for speaking out against the oppressive regime and for you know, for being just being Ukrainian and speaking about topics that were important. Can you imagine then for years after, for decades after, to be called like a Russian artist by everyone around the world? It's probably one of the kind of, and I'm so glad that finally, you know, of course Ukrainians earlier than many others, but now finally this question is being raised, that it's just so important, at least for his legacy and for his memory, for us to say that he's Ukrainian and be able to be proud about that and not, you know, continue these decades of calling him a Russian artist and a Russian whatever people call him. And but I also wanted to ask you, it's so sad that just, it's only for me personally, the full-scale invasion that made me like so extremely interested in a lot of Ukrainian culture and art and things like that. And of course, like, I got a bit obsessed with Alla Horska at one point in time. But I just wanted to also ask you if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit with us about the particular role that maybe Ukrainian, you know, women artists, female artists played in kind of this fight against the colonial Russian regime, and what anyone in particular you'd like to highlight for other people to read and delve more into.
Thank you so much for this question, because I just love to share, you know, Ukrainian art and Ukrainian, especially female artists. I think one of my most favorite artist, not just female, but just Ukrainian artist, is Maria Primachenko. Many art historians, and especially during Soviet period, because I don't remember the year she was born, but she died in 1997. So her life was actually this experience of Soviet period. And she was born into a peasant family, and her mother was talented at embroidery. And like many Ukrainian women from the village, she lived among art. She has painted houses since childhood. So Primachenko, she's best known for her fantastic animals. But many of these animals have a story behind them, and many of them were dedicated to family, relatives, or neighbors. But her art was also very social. It was about social and political topics. For example, as war, because she lost her husband during the Second World War, but also she lived near Chernobyl. She was making art about Chernobyl and how she was feeling about it, how she was feeling about this nature that has a danger in it. It's beautiful Ukrainian nature has, has a danger now because of this Chernobyl disaster. And actually, I think that Chernobyl catastrophe, we should think about it as this colonial, not like heritage, but because Russia was using the other countries and states as just as a colonies for different resources. So they were building these nuclear power plants and other power plants in Ukraine, for example, or in the Baltic countries, just for using them and to be safe, just not to use in their resources. But it's very sad, actually, that she was considered as just primitive artist, because of course because it was very easy to use it as a also in some propaganda narratives during the Soviet period, because the Soviet power, they took her artworks to different exhibitions in the Europe, in the United States, and then she didn't have anything from it. So they were just using her works to show how great life in the Soviet Union is, that even peasant woman is so talented and she can do everything at the same time. I think the other example would be, of course, Alla Horska, who was killed by KGB in 1970s because of her art, actually, and because she was one of the founders and active members of the Club of Creative Youth. So they were tried with Vasily Simonenko and Les Tanyuk to find unmarked mass grave sites of so-called enemies of the Soviet state in Bukovnaya and Kiev region. And they were also trying to protest against the repression of Ukrainian human rights activists. So I think she's very important as an example of that art is never beyond the politic. The culture and the art is actually a very political thing all the time. Even if you're just working with, because she was working with monumental works, but her art was really connected to this avant-garde Ukrainian tradition and probably to Boychukists, who were this art group repressed in 1930s. So everything in Ukrainian art is connected. But also her friend Lyubov Panchenko, she was an amazing designer and artist. She was from Bucha, and last year she stayed in Bucha during the occupation, and because she was more than 80 years old, she didn't survive the starvation and dehydration, because of course no one could help her at that condition when Russians just killed people for anything. I really recommend to find her works. She's amazing, and it's really sad that she died like that. Yeah, talking maybe about contemporary artists, I would recommend Alevtina Kakhidze. She's doing amazing works about Russian imperialism, and she's explaining that in a very just normal, cool, very simple way. so everyone could understand that. And she stayed also, she's from Donetsk region. She lived in Kyiv for many years, but her mother was under the occupation since 2014 when the war in Donbas started. And last year she also experienced the war because her village was close to the Bucha to district. So she heard all the explosions and she almost, thank God, she didn't experience the occupation, and she's fine and she's working a lot. So yeah, just check her out.
Thank you so much for sharing all these names. After every conversation with you and after reading every Twitter thread you carefully research and put out there, I always end up hungry for more information. And this is, for those who haven't been lucky to follow your work, this is one of the previews and one of the reasons why Oksana is such an amazing source of information about Ukrainian art, with so much carefully put contextual information as well. So thank you so much. We unfortunately have to wrap up, but we have two last questions. One is coming from our Patreon sponsors. And this is something our Patreon sponsors have as a perk, this exclusive opportunity to ask our guests direct questions. And it comes from Kate, and she writes that artists have their finger on the pulse of their culture. So investigating artists' interpretations of Ukrainian culture and of Russia's current genocide gives powerful insights. Because Russia is attempting to erase the Ukrainian people and Ukrainian culture, it feels imperative to try to learn as much as we can about Ukrainian artwork, past and present, and to share the depth, beauty, and complexity of it to everyone. Your work, Oksana, makes this possible. Shiro dyakuyu. And Kate's question is, what Ukrainian art history books or resources you maybe want to recommend for more in-depth learning for foreigners? So if you have any ideas.
Sure. Thank you so much for this kind words. I'm trying my best. So about the books in English, right? So I would recommend the works of Tatiana Filevska. She's writing about Kazimir Malevich and his in the Ukrainian context in his artworks and his life. Also, I would recommend the catalogs, this art books of Mysteriy Arsenal about Boychukism, because Boychukism is really important. Is really important an art group that was unfortunately just repressed and erased from our memory for a very long time. And I think that we really should know about it, and we should understand and try to maybe talk about it as much as we can. Also, I would recommend the book of Katerina Yakovlenko. It's called Why, I don't remember the name, Why There Were Ukrainian Women Artists. So it's about Ukrainian women artists from the last century and contemporary ones. You can definitely find it in the PDF file. But I was thinking maybe I should create the list and just publish it today for everyone who is interested. Oh, and also the book of Alisa Loshkina called A Permanent Revolution. It's a book about almost 100 years of Ukrainian art. And also this new book from... it's called Treasures of Ukraine. It's about Ukrainian art from, 1,000 years ago and to contemporary works. It's published on Thames and Hudson, I think. Yeah, so maybe I should really create this list and publish it and tag the Ukrainian spaces.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing, yeah. I want to read all those things myself already. But thank you so, so much for joining us today. And I know that it was a tough night and everyone was up. And, you know, it's been a long day for many people in Kyiv and in Ukraine. So we're just very grateful for your time and for joining us. And also for the amazing work that you do on your Twitter and outside of your Twitter as well, and for being so honest and sharing so many amazing stories of Ukrainian artists, but also your own story, which is just as valid and just as important. We're super grateful, and we really hope that people will start, and I know they are already, but I hope even more people will start listening to what Ukrainians like you have to say, and change the way in which people in the outside world perceive Ukrainian art. So thank you so much once again, and
thank you.
I'm super grateful for your time with us.
Yeah, thank you everyone who were listening. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Oksana, and you leave us with so many important lessons, and the most important of, I think, of them all is that speaking about Ukrainian art, and because it has been ignored for decades and still being largely ignored, you kind of help to serve that historical justice, not only for Ukrainian artists and the history of Ukrainian artists to be heard and their impact on global culture, but just Ukrainian voices that deserve to be heard and were raised to silence. So thank you so much. And thank you so much for the rest of you. If you're listening it as a live show or as a podcast, you make sure that this show is happening, and specifically our Patreon sponsors. And if you loved this vibe of featuring brilliant and diverse Ukrainian voices who help us to decolonize Ukraine conversations, please consider subscribing to our Patreon community. And maybe if you're already part of the community, bring your friends there, because we really rely on your support and solidarity on this important mission. You can check all our previous episodes by going to ukrainianspaces.com. We're present on more than 15 podcast platforms. So if you're listening as a podcast, please rate and comment. That's exceptionally important. I know everybody repeats that, but it is. That's all for today, apart from one important thing, and it is Slava Ukraini.
Heroim Slava, and see you all next time. Thank you so much.
Bye.